to have a child know that you're not limited by what's around you. You're not limited by what you see. Again, you can be greater than your greatest excuse, and you can really become anything that you want to. These kids just need someone to show them that. They need someone to be there for them, be their resource, be their mentor, be their guide, be their inspiration. We all had a hand growing up. That's really what these kids need. And so when you see that really manifest in a child and their confidence is boosted, their schoolwork improves, their behavior improves, and they've got this new, really positive outlook on life, it just shows you that all of this work that we're doing is so worth it.
A good kitchen produces good food, but a great kitchen brings people together. Welcome to Meet Me in the Kitchen, a podcast inspired by Little Kitchen Academy and supported by Birkenstock. Exploring the key ingredients to a meaningful life and how they are changing lives from scratch. Here's my dad and your host, Scott Rintoul.
We're living in a very interesting time right now. On one hand, it's never been easier to connect with anyone on the planet. Technology has changed the game when it comes to accessibility and convenience. But on the other hand, there's an argument to be made that it's never been more difficult to get to know one another. What appears to be unprecedented access into people's lives is often just a series of well-curated snapshots and highlight reels instead of a more well-rounded indication of who they actually are. Anna Marie Wiley understands this completely. If you watch The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, you might think you know who she is and what she's all about. But if you get the opportunity to have a conversation with her like I did, you find out just how relatable, community-minded, and family-focused she is. Like many of you, Anna Marie is a proud mom who enrolled her children at Little Kitchen Academy, and she found an environment and a philosophy that very much aligned with her own. As a result, she was more than happy to accept an invitation to meet me in the kitchen, where we talked about everything from reality TV to philanthropy to nursing. And she gave me a glimpse into what she and her family call Wiley's World. When I did a little bit of research on you, there's no way that I couldn't start with your time at University of British Columbia. You are a former athlete, a basketball player. Talk to me about your athletic career.
Yeah, so I'm from Abbotsford originally. That's where I grew up. And I started running track at 5 years old. And I did that from age 5 to 12. And then I tore cartilage in my knee, had surgery, and then I switched over to basketball. I played all through high school at Mowat. And then I went to UBC and I played for the Thunderbirds. And it was an amazing time. I'm such an advocate for sports. I think that sports just teach children so many invaluable lessons, like time management, teamwork, dedication, like all these life skills that can really be transferred to so many areas. So sports has done a lot for me, and it was such a wonderful era of my life.
For those who don't know, Abbotsford is a community just outside of Greater Vancouver in British Columbia, and you referenced your high school there. As a former Thunderbird myself, when I found out we were having a UBC alum on here, I did want to start with that. What was it particularly about the sport of basketball that did so much for you in your life, Anna Marie?
You know what, really? It was the teamwork. I loved being part of a group and working together cohesively for one common goal. Like, we literally became family. And it's the type of sport where you can practice your individual skills. Like, I still wake up really early in the morning. I wake up at 4:30 to work out. Even when I was in high school and college, I used to go to the gym at like 6 o'clock in the morning, and I'd be shooting around by myself, working on my skills. But then, you know, you're bringing all of those aspects together with your team, working together for one common goal. And it's the kind of sport where, you know, you can always keep improving, always keep getting better. And that's kind of like my motto for life. Like, there's always room for improvement. You can always, you know, create a better version of yourself. So it's such a wonderful team sport that has just always resonated with me.
I'm a number of years older than you, but we almost crossed over in the Thunderbird athletic regime at UBC. So I do know a number of your former teammates as well. And that was a very successful time. with UBC women's basketball as well. I imagine pushing yourself and having that group around you to bring out the best in yourself and bring out that competitive environment really benefited you later down the road as well.
Absolutely, it did. I mean, it really teaches you these life skills that you can apply to so many things. Like when you have to really apply yourself and really focus on one thing, you can apply that to your schoolwork. You can apply that to your career. You can apply that to your family. You can really apply it to anything in your life that you want to perfect or just become better at. And so, yeah, competing at, you know, that level of sports, you know, it's a very unique experience. And being around other like-minded people, it's something that is just, it's so inspiring.
All of our lives take these unique twists and turns to get us to where we end up here having this conversation. So what was a teenage or early 20s Anna Marie thinking about doing at that time? Were you thinking about going into the types of careers that you've ended up going into?
Yeah, I was actually. I always knew that I wanted to do something in healthcare. And going back to that story when I was 12, when I first tore cartilage in my knee, my anesthesia provider actually let me stay awake for my surgery. So gave me a spinal and a little bit of sedation. And I remember watching it on the screen. And it was absolutely fascinating that I'm like, that's the inside of my knee. And I'm awake watching it. And I just really liked the idea of being able to work with people during such a vulnerable time in their life as a healthcare provider. And I feel like with my unique background, I can really relate to a wide variety of people and just help to keep them comfortable and put them at ease. Also, I'm like a total science nerd. So it's like, it's kind of all of my strengths were able to come together. And that's why I chose to go into nursing. And it's such a rewarding career. You meet the most incredible people. You hear the most amazing life stories. And again, like I said, you get to be with people during, you know, what is often very traumatic times of their lives. And when you're able to be that support person for them, it gives me so much. It really fills up my soul. So it's just such an invaluable career.
You bring up such an interesting and perhaps underrated point about the medical environment and being in such a vulnerable state. People are so concerned with the outcome that oftentimes I think many of us overlook that vulnerability and having someone there with that bedside manner, as it's traditionally been termed, to make you feel at ease and to really help you through the procedure. Did you see an example of that when you underwent your own procedure? Or is that just something that's natural to you that you wanted to be able to give to people?
I mean, I've always been lucky to have, during all of my surgeries, wonderful healthcare providers that were taking care of me and really made me feel comfortable, especially as a young child. And then for myself, it's kind of my personality. I'm a people person. Like, I just love being around people. I get energy from being around people. And so, you know, when you walk into a room and you can tell that someone's kind of really going through a tough time and you can sit with them and hold their hand and, you know, really, really hear their story and really help them to feel understood so that you can know how to best help them. It's just something that I find so, so rewarding.
Now, where you were going to school at the time, the University of British Columbia has a pretty fine nursing and medical background for education, but you made your way stateside. What compelled you to go down to California to pursue your career?
You know what? It was really the weather. It was the weather. I graduated in 2004 with my nursing degree. And, you know, I love Vancouver and all of my family is still back in the Vancouver area. It is so near and dear to my heart. It'll always be home. I really like the sunshine. And as an RN, it was easy for me to become a travel nurse. So right after I graduated, I took the NCLEX, which is the American nursing exam. And then I moved down to Los Angeles here 6 months later as a travel nurse. And, you know, I had planned to come to LA for 3 months and then go to New York for 3 months and then kind of work my way down the East Coast. But I didn't go anywhere. I just stayed here. And, you know, almost 20 years later, here I am. But yeah, initially it was the weather and opportunities. And I wanted to try, you know, something new with my life and kind of see what else was out there for me, find new challenges, continue to push myself, continue to grow. And it just, you know, obviously turned out to be a great decision for me, you know, married and four children later, and I'm very happy here. So yeah.
I do want to get into your family life a little bit later in our conversation, but you obviously have a very adventurous and ambitious personality that would push you to do something like that. Did you find community right away, or did it take a while for you to settle in?
You know, I did. I found community with my coworkers. They were wonderful. And as a travel nurse, it's almost like we had our own built-in community in that regard. So I've always been very lucky to be able to find these great groups of people that have always, you know, helped me feel welcome and comfortable and grounded. And then when I met my husband 6.5 years later, and he's a Los Angeles native, so that, you know, opened up a whole new world of people and contacts and networks, et cetera, especially him being a public figure. So that was quite an interesting transition for me as well. But yeah, I've been very blessed to always have really wonderful, supportive, inspiring circles of friends around me.
And for those who may not know, your husband is a former NFL player, Marcellus Wiley, who's also a sports personality and has been for a number of years in the United States. You mentioned that it was interesting that he had a public persona. What was it like adapting to that world, which obviously you're very comfortable with now?
Yeah, it took a minute though. It really did take a minute. It was wild. I'll be honest. It was really wild. So we first met maybe 3 months after I had started CRNA school. And, you know, I was very like, you know, nose to the grind, work, doing all these things because it's a really challenging program. And it's funny because when I met him, he, like I said, opened up this world of new events and opportunities and networks and people and stuff. And I remember 2 months into us dating, so it was Super Bowl in Indianapolis, and, you know, he was going for work and hosting and all that kind of stuff. And he's like, I really want you to come with me. And I was like, I have exams on Monday. I can't just go to the Super Bowl for the weekend. Like, what are you talking about? And he's like, you know what? You can. He's like, you can do all the things. Like, he was really like my biggest cheerleader. He's like, watch, you can do it. So I go to Indianapolis for the weekend. I'm, you know, studying like crazy in the hotel room during the day. He's off doing his work stuff. At night, you know, we're going to all these fancy Super Bowl events and everything and meeting this person and this person. And, you know, we come back on Monday. I go to class, take my exams, my grades were even higher. And so he's like, see, he's like, you just need to relax a little bit and trust yourself and know that you can do it all. So that was really cool. And I remember there was this, oh my goodness, this one birthday party that we went to also shortly after we started dating. And this ties into my basketball history. So like, I want you to come to my friend Lisa's birthday party with me. Wonderful. Great. Let's go. So we go to this birthday party and it's Lisa Leslie. And as a basketball player, like, she was literally one of my idols, right? So we go to this birthday party and I was like, you've got to be kidding me. That was the cusp for me of like famous people that you only see on TV versus like now they're really in my life. And it took some time for me to like adjust to that and to just kind of be like, all right, well, here we are now. And like, this is your new reality. But having said that, you know, it's always been very important to me to stay grounded and, you know, remember who I am, remember where I'm from. I remember one of the things that my mom told me right before I moved to Los Angeles was always be yourself, always stay true to who you are and never forget where you came from. And that's something that I've always held very close. So, you know, even though we're doing all the things and living this life and everything, I've always stayed grounded and stayed true to who I am.
I want to continue that conversation, but I have to ask right now, who's the better athlete, you or your husband?
Oh my gosh. Well, number one, it depends on who you ask. Number two, it depends on what sport. It's so funny because right now we're super into pickleball. He's actually outside getting ready to have a bunch of people over. They play like all the time. So it depends on the sport. If it's basketball, I mean, you know, of course I'm going to be the better player. Pickleball, we're almost evenly matched. He's probably a little bit better. He plays a little bit more than me. And then, you know, football, he's definitely got the size and strength advantage on me. So our house is hilarious. We're so competitive with each other in the funniest and silliest way. And it's nice because, you know, that's one of the ways that we're always pushing each other and challenging each other. So yeah, again, just depends on who you ask.
Well, you mentioned before that he pushed you outside your comfort zone and maybe brought out a side of you that you didn't know was there when you told that story a couple of minutes ago. Is that a symbiotic relationship that you have? Because your husband has worked in a field that is very public, can be very critical, can be very cutthroat as well. So are you his sounding board and his springboard at the same time?
Yes, I would say we really do work off each other in that regard. I'm a big stress freak. Like, I'm very particular. I'm very type A. He likes to say I'm very OCD. So, you know, I can be really like riled up or just like stressed. Like, I got to get this done. This has to happen. This has to happen. And he's much more laid back in that regard. And so what he's really taught me is that stress doesn't equal results, or stress doesn't necessarily equal productivity, right? It's helpful to a certain point, and then it becomes a hindrance. So he's really taught me that I can relax with things and still produce the same results and still be just as successful. And he's taught me a lot of things about like being in the public eye. It was, you know, a very new thing for me. And so he's really been a sounding board for me and given me amazing advice, because like you said, he's been in the public eye for such a long time. And so, yeah, we're really able to play off each other well in that regard and support each other really well.
Now, not everybody will see the video of this, but I can tell those who are listening that you were very good in jumping into your own kitchen, which is kind of the theme behind Meet Me in the Kitchen. And that's where you're doing this interview from, which leads me to the question of Little Kitchen Academy, because that's what brought us together for this conversation.
Right.
How did Little Kitchen Academy come into your world?
So it was funny. My sister-in-law, my husband's sister, actually told me about it, because we have four children. So we have my stepdaughter who's 24, our son is 8, our middle daughter is 5, and our baby is 4. It's actually her birthday today. Happy birthday, Olivia.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. You know, the girls, they love being in the kitchen. Like, mommy, can we make pancakes? Let's make our smoothies. Let's, you know, do all these things. So my sister-in-law told me about this. She's like, there is this Montessori inspired cooking class that is not that far away. I think the girls would really love it. So I looked into it, signed them up for a class, and it was like their favorite activity to do. It's been absolutely inspiring for them and so much fun for them. And they get so excited to go. It's literally like a staple in their rotation of activities now.
So what was it about it for you as a parent that lit you up? Obviously, we want to see our kids enjoy. I've got two daughters as well. We want to see our kids enjoy the activities that they ask us to pursue. But as a parent, there's a fulfillment that comes with that as well. So what was it for you?
So for me, it goes back to my childhood. I was a very picky eater. I think until I was, I don't know, maybe 15, I ate rice and ramen noodles and hot dogs. You know, I was a very picky eater growing up. And 2 out of 3 of the young ones are very picky as well. So it was really important for me for them to have a healthy and positive relationship with food, to learn about the things that they're putting into their bodies and how that's going to fuel them. And then I felt like, you know, if they're really involved in the things that they're creating and the things that they're making, that's probably going to make them want to try it a little bit more and get a little bit more creative and adventurous with the things that they're having. And it actually has. It's really worked. You know, they'll bring some of those things that they've learned at Little Kitchen Academy home, and they'll want to recreate it, or they'll want to add this ingredient or try it this way this time, you know. And so it's really been like this catalyst for them, you know, wanting to really be their own little chefs at home. And it's been a really fun trajectory for them.
One of the stories that I've heard from many people who've brought their children to Little Kitchen Academy is that they'll see the recipe on the wall, and their thought as a parent is, my child won't eat that. My child doesn't want anything to do with that. Has there been anything that your children have tried there that they've probably enjoyed that has surprised you?
You know what? It's made the middle one eat a few more vegetables, because she loves pizza. I mean, they all love pizza, but she really loves pizza. And, you know, at first she'll be like, ooh, yuck, I'm not going to try peppers, or I'm not going to try that. But if it's on the pizza, you know, she's going to try it a little bit. And so we've seen some progress in the things that they've wanted to eat because of it. So it's been really positive.
We've talked a lot about your athletic background, so I can see where the health aspect plays into the thought of this being a very good avenue for your children to better their relationship with food. What about from the nursing side as well? Because you've seen people who are in not great spots and perhaps don't have that same relationship.
That's right. I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, there's really this triad in healthcare: high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and diabetes. And those things, I don't know the exact percentage, but it's a very high percentage of people that do have that. And, you know, there are lifestyle factors that feed into that. And, you know, healthy diet and healthy eating and a positive relationship with food is one of those big factors. And so I feel like it's really important from a young age for kids to understand, you know, the nutrients that they're putting into their body. You don't want too much salt. You don't want too much of, you know, the bad fats, those kinds of things. So they really understand these are the things that are going to fuel my body and help me. And these are the things that could potentially, you know, lead to me being sick down the line. And another thing as well, as I said, my husband grew up here in Los Angeles. There are definitely pockets in the city that, you know, we call food deserts where there aren't as many healthy options. Right. And so a lot of people are kind of, you know, stuck with what they have available to them around them. And so I love that children can go to Little Kitchen Academy, learn these things, learn about these foods, and bring it back to their families. So it's not just the child that's learning, it's really everyone in their household. So I think that's such an important thing.
It's a really good point that you bring up as well. And just on that same topic of where the medical field meets our relationship with food. I recently spoke to another registered nurse who was on this podcast. And one of the things that inspired her to get involved with Little Kitchen Academy was that we don't deal with preventative care as much. We don't think about it that way often enough, in her opinion, in society. And her inspiration was, look, if I can help influence future generations, I won't see as many people in front of me suffering from these same things. Do you resonate with that as well?
Absolutely. And that's, again, going back to that triad. If you've got people who, you know, are taking the preventative approach, you're going to prevent a lot of these disease processes from developing. You know, parents are a child's first teacher. So if you have a parent that has an unhealthy relationship with food, or they don't have, you know, the knowledge, or their environment isn't conducive to being able to easily make these healthy food options, that is going to be passed down to that child. And then it just becomes this vicious cycle. So yes, it's of paramount importance for people to be taught the things that they're putting into their body, understanding the proper ways to fuel it. It's going to lessen the load on the healthcare system. Our reliance on medications and treatments are going to decrease, and it's just going to, you know, make it easier for everyone in that backlog to essentially be able to get the healthcare that they need, because there's going to be less people that need it because the things that are preventable won't be as prevalent.
So there's the health side of it and the relationship with food side, but there's also a community aspect to Little Kitchen Academy that a lot of parents talk about, and the children eating together and cooking together and going through knife skills together as well. Have you found that there have been some stories come out of your children's experiences there that kind of light you up in that manner as well?
Oh, absolutely. They love like chopping their little vegetables and everything now, and they've got their little safe knives, and they come in with their aprons, they go up on their stools, and they're helping me prep food and everything. It's such a joy. Like, they all light up. It's an activity that we all get to do together. They love helping to set the table. And then, you know, now we're getting to enjoy this meal that they've helped create. They're really involved in it now. And so now they're really excited to eat it. So it's really like a full circle kind of experience. It's really great.
Well, we don't have them here to answer this question, but we ask every single guest who comes on the podcast this question. So I'll ask it to you, Anna Marie. What is the one ingredient that is always in your kitchen and why?
I would say, you know, it's just chicken. Like, we just, you know, I don't know if you meant like a spice or something, but it's just chicken. We eat so much chicken in our house because it's an easy lean meat to cook with, and the kids love it. You can prepare it so many different ways. So I would say, yeah, there's always a chicken thawed out in the fridge, or it's already prepped, you know, tacos, fajitas, pasta, whatever we're making, there's always chicken in our kitchen.
Well, the question is asked in a very open manner because people take it different directions. Some people go with an actual tangible ingredient. Some people go with a characteristic as well. You mentioned your mother earlier in this podcast, and I know you said you were a picky eater, but it sounds like the two of you had a very good relationship. And I'm wondering if some of that came from the kitchen in your household.
It did. So I actually grew up in an Indonesian family. I was adopted when I was born, and Indonesian food, it's so rich in their culture. So, you know, I grew up eating, you know, like the nasi gorengs and the satays and all the peanut sauce, all the rich sauces and everything that we had. And so it was so much fun watching my mom and my aunts and my uncles in the kitchen prepping these amazing dishes. It was literally an experience. Like if we had, say, a family reunion coming up, a holiday, something like that, they would start days before, all of them in the kitchen, prepping these incredibly rich cultural dishes. And all of us kids would, you know, kind of be there on the side and helping where we could and putting this in and, you know, just taking in all these amazing aromas. It was such a fun experience. And so, you know, really family bonding over food is something that I grew up with. And so it's another reason why it's so close to me.
What wonderful memories that you just described. Have some of those recipes come down to you? Do you use some of those cultural dishes in your own kitchen when you cook for your own family?
I do. Yeah, I try to. I mean, I'm not as good as my mom was, but I do try to sprinkle them in for the kids here and there. And it's a lot of fun.
Well, none of us are as good as our moms because there's an emotion that goes with food. Isn't there? I can prepare dishes that my late grandmother made or that my mom makes, and it doesn't taste quite the same because it's not made with their hands. That's what I find as well. Do you have the same experience?
I do. Even things like baking, like my mom made the most amazing cookies, you know, and I've got her recipe, but I can't perfect it the way that she did, you know? And I used to call her and be like, Mom, mine aren't turning out like yours. And I'm like, how much more of this should I put or how much less of this? And she's like, I can't tell you. She's like, I just kind of feel it out and try it. And, you know, they just have this knack for it because they've been doing it for so long.
Now, unfortunately, I know that you lost your mother recently, and I'm really sorry to hear of her passing.
And, thank you.
And pass on my condolences to you and your family. She obviously passed on that love of food and cooking to you as well. What did she pass on to you about being a mother?
About being a mother, the most important thing she told me was just to always make sure that your house was filled with love. Filled with love, filled with that excitement, that joy. Let the kids be kids. Let them play. You know, there's toys everywhere. That's okay. It's not going to be like that forever. Embrace it, you know? And my mom had 8 brothers and sisters. So I have a lot of cousins. So growing up, you know, those family reunions that I talked about, our house was just, it was filled with people. And so I've always loved having a big family. And so that was something that was really important to me when I started my own family. I wanted to have, I mean, initially we wanted 5, we got 4, we're close, but I wanted a big family because I wanted that huge amount of love and energy and excitement to just fill the walls of our home. And I think we've done a really, really good job of doing that. So yeah, just, you know, always making sure that our children know that they're loved and supported in whatever they decide to do, and that we'll always be there for them. We'll always be their biggest cheerleaders. My mom was always there for me, and, you know, she was always my biggest cheerleader, and she was so inspiring. She was a single mom. She raised me and my 2 sisters on her own, and, you know, she did an amazing job. You know, she was very busy, but she always made sure that we knew that we were her top priority and that nothing was more important than us. So, yeah.
Did you appreciate it at the time, or was it only once you became a mother that you realized how much she actually did for you?
Oh, when I became a mother, you know, when you're a teenager in early 20s, like you're not concerned with those things. I was like, I'm playing basketball. I'm going out. I'm hanging out with my friends. You truly don't understand until you become a parent and you realize the level of sacrifice that it takes to be a parent, the amount of intentional work that it takes to be a parent, all of the micro decisions it takes to be a parent, right? Like that invisible load that they talk about of parenting. Yeah, I didn't appreciate it until I became a parent. And again, like I said, you know, she was a single mother raising three girls on her own. And, you know, I'm happily married and we have three young ones at our house, and our house is bananas. There are times when I'm like, whoa, like I'm at capacity. I can't, you know, it's hard to juggle all the schedules and this person has this practice and this game and this one has piano and this one has this, and to fit everything in and make sure that everyone has enough time with us, is feeling loved and valued and seen, is able to, you know, do all the activities that they want to do so they get that extra kind of enrichment. It takes a lot of work. And I'm like, I have no idea how she did that on her own. She was incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Well, there's all of those things you describe added in with that environment that you said you want to create. It's very quiet and serene behind you now as we have this conversation. But is your house generally one where you are having kids over, you're having friends over, and you want that little bit of chaos that might feel a little stressful at the time, but in the end, you actually appreciate?
That's exactly what it is. So we lovingly term our house Wiley's World because it's always filled with people. Like, I mean, literally in 20 minutes, there's going to be about 20 people in our backyard playing pickleball right out there. You know, the weekends, it's like, come to our house. We've got food everywhere. We've got people everywhere. The kids are in the pool playing. They're in the basement playing. Like, we love that energy. Our house is like, it's the playhouse, you know, and I really want that for our kids and for our kids' friends so that they feel like, you know, there's a safe, fun place for everybody to go to. And, you know, on the weekend, it's nice to have families over, not just, you know, an adult thing. It's like we have family hangs at Wiley's World, you know, and it's literally like a big circus at our house. It really is. It's a big circus and it's so fun. It's so full of love. It's so full of energy. It's just, I wouldn't have it any other way. I always wanted to have my house be that house and we did it, you know, it is that house. So it's so much fun.
It sounds fun. And you've just given me the title of the podcast now. I don't think there's any way I can call it anything but Wiley's World after you said that. And this will be my dad pickleball joke, is that we're doing this in the kitchen, but no jumping in the kitchen when you get out to the pickleball court. That I know enough about. I haven't played often, but I know that about pickleball.
Oh my God.
Now, we mentioned that Little Kitchen Academy is what brought us together. There's a charitable component to Little Kitchen Academy as well. And I know that's a big priority for you and your husband. You have a charitable foundation. Tell me what Project Transition is.
So Project Transition, we partner with underserved communities and individuals in order to provide resources and mentorship to, you know, children in these areas that otherwise wouldn't have these opportunities. One of the big catalysts for why we started this foundation is the way that both my husband and I grew up. Him being a Los Angeles native, he grew up in Compton. And, you know, a lot of people are kind of constrained to the things that they see around them. And if you don't see people doing certain things, or you don't see that representation, or if you're not exposed to different things, you don't think that that is something that is possible for you. So we have pillars in Project Transition that we focus on, and there are things that we ask people to contribute, and they are time, talent, and treasure. So your time, if you can partner with a child, mentor that child, you know, you're showing them experiences, you're teaching them about your path, you're showing them that they are able to overcome their circumstances, be greater than their greatest excuse, and show them that they too can do that. Your talent is, you know, showing them that, let's just take sports, for example, because obviously that's something that we're really big on. Teaching a child, giving them that skills to use that and to create opportunities for themselves, showing them that in using your sport, you can become a greater version of yourself. And studies show that children that are involved in sports, they fare much better at school. They enter college at higher rates. Again, it's going back to teaching them all of those life skills that they can use in so many different avenues. And then treasure, obviously, you know, we are a nonprofit and we rely on donations to Project Transition. And so we'll use those funds to partner with different leaders in the community or different, you know, community centers, things like that, in order to provide these opportunities to these youths.
That's wonderful that you've established this foundation. What has been the most fulfilling aspect of it for you?
It's the kids. It's really the kids. When you have someone that comes back to you and says, you know, had I never been exposed to this, had I never known that this was something that was available to me, it's so powerful. And to have a child know that you're not limited by what's around you, you're not limited by what you see. Again, you can be greater than your greatest excuse, and you can really become anything that you want to. These kids just need someone to show them that. They need someone to be there for them, be their resource, be their mentor, be their guide, be their inspiration. We all had a hand growing up. That's really what these kids need. And so when you see that really manifest in a child and their confidence is boosted, their schoolwork improves, their behavior improves, and they've got this new, really positive outlook on life, it just shows you that all of this work that we're doing is so worth it.
The way you describe that, I can see the immediate synergy with many of the pillars that Little Kitchen Academy has as well. And you make a really good point that often, because of the environment children might find themselves in, if they don't see themselves in a role, they'll never believe that they can. And I think that's part of the foundation at Little Kitchen Academy as well, that if you give children an opportunity in a kitchen that maybe they don't have, because as you and I both know, we live in this world of convenience and fast and pick up your food and go, and who cares what's in it for some people, because they may not have the time. But you put somebody in that environment, you put them in Project Transition, and they see what they can be. And it's years later that those roots really come to life and bring us better people and better communities, don't they?
That's right. That is such a perfect description of it. There's so many parallels in what you guys do and what we do at Project Transition. And it's just such important, important work.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. Now, a complete turn from that is television personality that your husband is and that you are as well. I alluded to this a little bit earlier. I do have to ask, because I said I'm a number of years older, but you and I both grew up in the era where reality TV became a thing. And I think whether people watch it all the time or whether they've only been exposed to it a little bit, I think every one of us has wondered, what's it like to be a part of reality TV? You were on The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. What is it like?
Right. You know what? It's such a different experience. It's so hard to describe. It's, oh man, how do I describe it? It's like you're in this universe where, you know, you're really opening up your entire life and you're being very open and honest and vulnerable to the things that you're going through and all your thoughts and all your feelings and things like that. And, you know, I guess I was kind of used to having like cameras here or there before because of Marcellus, but then all of a sudden it's like, no, it's about you now. And you're like, oh, wow. Like, am I really that interesting? Like, okay. And so that was a little bit, you know, something I had to adapt to and be used to. So that was very interesting. And then when you see everything kind of like unfold on TV and how they kind of, you know, put this over here and this goes over here and, you know, they work their little interesting magic, it's such a unique experience. It really is. There's nothing like it. It's a lot of fun. It can be very wacky, but it's such a unique experience.
Was it a difficult decision to say yes to?
I wouldn't say it was a difficult experience. And it was really my husband that, you know, kind of encouraged me to do it because, you know, it came out of the blue. It wasn't something I even auditioned for or was even looking to do. They literally approached me out of the blue. And he said, you know what? This will be a great platform for you. He's like, you do so many things. He's been telling me for years, you know, you need to do a podcast, you need to do a blog, something like that. You're a multi-hyphenate. You know, I've got this unique life story to tell. And really, I just want to motivate people. That's literally my life goal. I just want to inspire people. I want to motivate people. I want people to understand that it doesn't matter where you start. It doesn't matter where you come from, right? Like, you know, I was this little biracial girl from a farm town in Canada who was adopted. And, you know, look at me now. I've created this wonderful life around me. And it's really just about manifesting your dreams and doing your best and working as hard as you can and making good decisions and surrounding yourself with the right people, you know? And so that was really the message that I wanted to get out and that I will continue to always want to get out. I just want to motivate people and inspire people to be the best version of themselves.
Good for you. What's the best thing that's come out of the experience?
You know what? It's taught me a lot about myself. One of the things is it's made me very comfortable doing things like this, talking in front of people. I used to be terrified of public speaking, terrified. Like I wouldn't even do it at our wedding. I didn't even want to talk in front of our wedding. And I think being now a public figure, it's like you're an expert on yourself. You're sharing yourself with people. And, you know, I feel like I have a strong sense of self. I know who I am. I know what I represent. I know the messaging that I want to get out to people. And so, you know, when you're talking about that and you can be very, you know, a master of yourself, it becomes quite easy actually to share that with people. And I'm really enjoying doing that now. So I would say, you know, it's given me a different perspective. It's made me more introspective. And it has helped me to be very, very clear and intentional on the messages that I want to share people. And that's really made me understand, like I said, that, you know, my goal in life is to inspire and motivate people because I've had some wonderful people to look up to in my path. And I'm so thankful and so blessed for where I am. I want to share that with other people.
Is there anyone in particular who stands out as that example? You just mentioned you had people in your path that inspired or motivated.
My mom, number one, because she was such a strong woman. My coaches, I had amazing coaches around me, you know, school counselors, Pat Lee at Mowat, Rudy Tightrope at Mowat. Like I just had to say their names because they were so instrumental to me when I was growing up. When there was a time where you don't know exactly what your path is going to be, and they're the people that are, you know, on your shoulder telling you like, you're amazing. You're gifted. You're really gifted. You're really special. You can do great things. And when you have somebody behind you telling you that and really helping you believe it, and then you start to put that into play in your life, it snowballs, right? Again, going back to Project Transition, when you're telling these kids that they can do it and they start to believe it and they keep seeing that momentum and they keep building upon it, it's going to amount to something, right? So all those kinds of people, my mom, my coaches, I've had amazing teachers. My husband, like I said, is my biggest cheerleader. He has such a unique outlook on life. And, you know, he's not the husband. This is so funny. He's not the husband that's just going to be like, oh, honey, you're perfect. You know, like everything you do is perfect. He's going to be like, nope, you can do better at this. And again, it goes, you know, back to us being athletes and being competitive, always pushing me to be a better version of myself. So he's another person that I really owe this to, you know, just these wonderful people. I have an amazing group of friends who, you know, are so inspiring. And, you know, I really look up to them. We feed off each other so well. They give me the most wonderful life advice. Just very lucky to have these people in my life.
I'm really glad you shouted out your high school counselors, whether it's them, teachers, coaches, anyone in your life that's able to give you confidence. We always talk about how for kids, it's the best time of your life. I don't think people appreciate how difficult the time can be as well, and how confusing it can be when you're trying to figure out your identity. And for someone to give you or any child the gift of confidence is arguably the best thing you can give a child.
That's right. I was just going to say that my parents got divorced when I was 10, and it took a few years for that to kind of register with me. But then there's a period where you kind of feel lost and you're like, where am I going here? What am I doing? And you know, it's also a time where your friends become more important than your family per se. And, you know, everyone's kind of discovering who they are and what they want to do and where they want to go. And what you said, confusing, that's exactly the word. It's a confusing time. And so when you have these people that it's almost like they know you better than you know yourself at that time, because they've seen so many people in that phase. When they are there for you and they are helping to instill that confidence in you, that is, I feel like, what every child needs. And there are a lot of children who, you know, they unfortunately don't have that, right? They might not have that family unit. They might not have those coaches around them. They might not have those teachers around them. And again, Little Kitchen Academy, Project Transition, they're safe spaces for children, right? You have people there that are going to mentor you, that are going to help you, that are going to inspire you and help you learn that you are good enough and you're amazing and you can excel. It is. It's paramount to have people there to help children really gain that confidence at that crucial point in their life.
Very well said, as it has been throughout this entire conversation. I would have never guessed that you were not a natural in front of the microphone, because it does come very naturally to you. And it's great that you've developed that skill, because with everything that you want to put out into the world and inspire people and help them, now you have an added skill set to do that. So I'm compelled to ask, what is next? What's on your radar for what you may be taking on soon?
Honestly, my head is like this. I have so many things that I want to do. I have a lot of things in the pipeline, a lot of things in works, a lot of things I want to do. There's so many different avenues that I want to use to help people and just to like get that positive messaging out. I feel like as well, you know, we're living in a time where image is such a big thing to young people, right? Social media is such a big thing for young people. And they're looking at those things and they think that everything has to be perfect. And it's really damaging. It's really damaging at a time in their life where they're not ready for that yet, right? They can't distinguish between what is real and what is just someone's highlights. And so another thing that I'm really big on is, you know, now being a public figure and being in this platform, I want to show younger people that like, you don't need to be perfect. Nothing is perfect. Nobody's perfect. If they tell you they're perfect, they're lying to you, right? You don't need to be perfect. You just need to be the best version of yourself and push yourself and do your best. And then you're winning. That's how you win, by just being the best version of yourself. Perfection is not real. I want to show the younger generation of that. Like, you know, someone could look at me and it's actually really funny. I'll tell you the story. I wasn't going to, but I'll tell you. So on the show that I was on, one of the things that I said, it got so much traction. I said, one of the reasons why my husband married me is because he said I'm a solid 8.5. And people were like up in arms, right? Like 8.5? How dare your husband not say you're a 10? How dare he not say you're perfect? And I'm like, but I'm not. I don't want him to say that I'm a 10. If he's telling me I'm a 10, he's not being truthful with me. And I'm not being truthful with myself. Because again, there's no such thing as perfect. And there is always room for improvement. So I want younger people to know that, that when you're seeing something that looks like it's perfect, it's probably not. And you don't need to be perfect, because you don't need to put that pressure on yourself.
It's a wonderful message. And I look forward to seeing how and where you bring that to more people in this world. You're an extremely busy person, so thank you very much for taking the time to meet me in the kitchen and have this conversation.
Thank you so much, Scott. I had so much fun.
Meet Me in the Kitchen is curated and produced by Toolkit Content. You can find more information about Little Kitchen Academy, including classes, locations, employment, and franchise opportunities at littlekitchenacademy.com. What's the one ingredient that's always in your kitchen?